It's a new month, and this is a new opportunity to showcase the people and places who make Western Wisconsin a cool place, actually cold, to live and grow. This is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. This week, we have a special conversation with a group of folks who shared a stage at various points in their past, and the sharing was so special that because of it, their friendships have endured, and now there's a book about it. Life Upon the Wicked Stage, History of Summer Theater in Eau Claire. The author and one of those friends, Will Denson, is here, along with Lila Robbins, Larry Heagle, Carol Spencer, Steve Turek, and Jeff Roshan. It was a full session and a fun session, and it's coming up later in the program. We'll also be talking with Kevin Peters, artistic director, and Robin Fossum, musician and new board president of the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra. They're beginning a new concert series, and we think you might like to know all about it. And what do you say we begin warming up this cold February day with a preview of next weekend's 9th annual Banbury Art Crawl? Our studio was visited by planning committee members Bruce Warren, also creative contributor, and Holly Gums, proprietor of Vintage Junkies, situated in Banbury Place, which is, of course, the host venue. All right, Holly, you have the intestinal fortitude to come before a radio microphone, so that means that you get the privilege of telling us all about your business. Tell me about Vintage Junkies.
We are an antique shop, so we have lots of, I'd say, oddities, different furniture.
What's an example of an oddity? Because we all have different tastes in what we like.
Right.
So how long have you been doing this? That's an easier question.
For around 5 years.
Before that, were you an antique junkie then?
No, actually I wasn't. My husband went to an auction, and next thing you know, we were hooked on buying things and collecting items and kind of out of hand, and now we're selling items.
And you thought, yeah, why not make money at it?
Right, exactly.
And Bruce, you're a shutterbug.
Right.
You're still using the big old boxy ones?
Yep. Still using a view camera, 4x5, still using film, still sloshing chemicals and printing my own.
Do you have a place in Banbury or not?
No, I'm the representative for the outside artist.
Oh, the outside artist. So there's inside, outside.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you guys get together. So you're both members of the committee because this is such a popular event. People like to hear what happens behind the scenes.
We usually meet about once a month, starting when about September.
For the crawl, right?
Right. That's just for the crawl. That's all we do.
We have two co-chairs, Christina and Lorelei, who do a lot of the grunt work.
I know that term, grunt work. I've had to do it, actually, a couple times in my life. All right, so the committee gets together. Do you get together immediately after each crawl and then say, here's what we should do next year, and then you meet as it gets closer? What happens?
Yeah, we do have a debriefing usually afterwards, a couple weeks after, take a breath, and then we evaluate what was good, what was bad, what we want to do different.
So what did last year's debriefing prove? What's new this year?
Well, we're going to have probably more things for children, for young children, and there'll be a couple of different venues they can go to, and people will be able to drop off their kids at one venue, and the other venue to just do projects and certain things. So we thought that was an important thing, because a lot of times children get bored just being dragged around by their parents.
And then you said food.
More food.
Yeah. Yes.
You can always use more food.
We're having Other Valley Farms Forage and Red Coal Barbecue is a visiting food vendor.
Yeah, most of it will be in Building 13.
Okay.
But Building 10, the one behind 13, the barbecue folks will be there as well.
So now let's envision someone out there listening to the radio who's never heard of the Banbury Art Crawl. It's in a big old refurbished factory in which sits people, creatives, and others in two buildings. I guess I don't know how many total buildings there are, but you use two of those.
Right.
And people, they don't literally crawl, but they go through art.
Yes.
Basically, yes.
Yes, back in 2009, Building 13 was sort of an artist community going on there. And so they just kind of put this thing together, and it's sort of grew from there. There'll be like 100 vendors of one type or another, all sorts of art and non-art sort of things going on there. Building 10 will be set up more like an art fair, per se, that people can wander around in. Okay. And Building 13, you have to go from floor to floor, and the different studios will be open.
40 visiting artists, and there's around 30 resident artists.
The analogy that I've always liked to use, having experienced the crawl, is that it's kind of a comfortable anthill, because that's what it feels like. You're going past people in hallways, yes, and you're going into little things and coming out of little things. And, but it's, like I said, it's comfortable.
And it's generally warmer than outside, too.
Although, wear your warm stuff, you know, you have to go between buildings. So.
Yes, you right. do.
There is a website. I went to the website. Is there a new map available yet?
Yep, we just finished that yesterday.
And that's important to have.
Yes.
Although you don't need it from the website, you'll be able to pick it up. Let's talk about specifics then. Someone says, I'm going to the Banbury Art Crawl on the 9th and 10th. What's going to happen when they get there?
Well, they should probably park in the Wisconsin Street parking lot, which is behind 10, or they can pick up a shuttle at the Volume 1.
Anyway, which is just down the street.
Right. And when they get there, they can pick up a map and, okay. And a menu.
They can wander at their heart's delight. So, Holly, the mood within Banbury Place, is it kind of cool? Is it kind of like a town within a town?
Yes, very much so.
You share a lot of things with each other? And...
Yes, it's very much a community all year round.
And what building are you in?
I'm in Building 13.
Okay, so from the horse's mouth, what is the website for people to get the information they need?
BanburyArtCrawl.com.
All right. And the dates and times. Bruce, you're on.
Friday, February 9th,
yes.
From 4 to 9.
Okay.
And then Saturday from 9 to 4 on Facebook and Instagram, too.
Yes.
Oh,
so,
well, that's
so
big.
So you can find us there, too.
That's big. Everybody is where they're supposed to be, it sounds like. So you guys have all the information you need out there. The Banbury Art Crawl, this is the 9th annual. It is a very popular event. They're taking care of you. Parking, shuttles, everything. Bruce Warren and Holly Gums, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, the website is Banbury, that's B-A-N-B-U-R-Y, artcrawl.com. The Banbury Art Crawl, one good way to thumb your noses in winter and enjoy the good life. We'll see you there. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for being in our audience today. The history of summer theater in Eau Claire, it's now in book form, and we have some of it in human form. A room full and phone full of guests coming up on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, where two-thirds of students study abroad before graduation and offering up to 24 off-campus courses and programs in Italy, Malta, England, and more. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. The Movie Lovers Extravaganza Concert features memorable film music and the winner of the Young Artist Competition, February 10th at the State Theater. Details at cvsymphony.org. By the way, we'll have Nobu on our show next week to talk about that Movie Lovers Extravaganza Concert. Since 1983, the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra, another ensemble for which West and Northwest Wisconsin is so fortunate, is plotting to make their artistic contribution even bigger, though their new event is somewhat smaller. Confused? Well, you won't be much longer. I spoke with Robin Fossum, who wears a few hats now for the organization, and musical director Kevin Peters just the other day. Kevin, congratulations on the new endeavor. It's called the Homegrown Series. Tell us why it's called that.
Well, we've got a lot of great artists in the northwestern Wisconsin area, and some of them get hidden within the symphony and the full symphony concerts, and others aren't able to participate in the symphony due to other conflicts. And I wanted to have an opportunity to showcase these artists in the community, either in small ensembles, small solo opportunities, and we came up with this concept of the Homegrown Series to showcase those artists within the symphony experience.
Okay, it's called a chamber music series. For those out there who don't know what chamber music is or what that configuration is like, tell us about that.
Well, for this particular series, we're open to all sorts of configurations, but essentially it's anything that's going to be smaller than the full symphony orchestra and smaller than a string orchestra as well. So piano trios, it can be duets, it can be quartets, quintets, woodwind quintets, brass quintets. It'll ultimately, hopefully, be all sorts of different instrumentations that we can showcase on that concert series. We're going to do it via application, so any ensembles that want to participate in the concert and beyond the concert would apply, and is screened by myself and a committee within the board of directors of the orchestra, and those applications will always be available online on our website.
Also on another line is Robin Fossum. Robin, you play the violin, but you'll also be pulling some other strings, I see. You have a recent, it's either an election or appointment, I don't know which. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I am now the president of the Red Cedar Symphony Board of Directors.
That's wonderful.
The board is comprised of about 10 very active members from the community and a couple from the orchestra. We try to integrate the board from representing Northwest Wisconsin. All have a love of music and all want to see the success and the vision of the Red Cedar Symphony as a growing symphony. The greatest compliments we've had is that our audience say they've never heard the Red Cedar Symphony sound so good. In the past year and a half, we've hired an executive director, mm-hmm. and we have Kevin, and we are just moving forward, and we have a great staff. We also have a personnel manager who is Patty Smith. So now we all have our designated roles. We seem to be quite successful at what we're doing right now.
Just prior to the phone call, Robin was rehearsing with a trio. She said her fingers are tired, but her voice is doing well.
I'm trying. Yeah. We had a good rehearsal this morning. The pieces that we're playing on February 11th, the highlight of the program is Beethoven's Trio No. 7 in B flat major, the Archduke, the very well-known piano trio, and it is beautiful. Peter Neal has asked me for quite a few years that we should play that. And finally, we got it together, and then this opportunity came with the Homegrown series. We'll also be playing a Finnish traditional piece, a runo, which is like a song lullaby. It's in 7/4 time. It's very interesting. We'll be playing All the Pretty Little Horses, which is a traditional children's song for piano trio, and then a Piazzolla, Oblivion, beautiful Milonga tango piece.
Ah, okay.
And then we will finish, Peter and I, with a Swedish waltz, Josephine's Dubfalls.
There's something in my notes here that I should bring up. I'm chomping at the bit to find out. Do you have your new xylophone?
We do have the new xylophone, and that's actually going to be showcased a little bit as well on our spring concert.
Spring concert's coming in March. The one we're talking about is just around the corner. It is Sunday, February 11th, 4 p.m., Bethany Lutheran Church in Rice Lake. I should bring out, too, that you guys also have a call for musicians. You have room for new orchestra members.
We're always welcoming the string players into the orchestra. Anyone out that's out there, a Suzuki-level book 3 at least, I think is where we're kind of starting at. And then anyone that's interested can reach out to the personnel manager, because we always have players who have commitments that might have to miss one concert or might have to miss a concert cycle. So the more we have in our address book, so to speak, the better.
Robin Fossum and Kevin Peters, always fun to talk to you guys, the enthusiastic Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra. Get out to see them, folks, if you can, up in Rice Lake. It's a wonderful ensemble to watch and listen to. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks, Al.
Again, the website is redcedarsymphony.org. And again, the new series begins next Sunday, February 11th, 4 p.m., Bethany Lutheran Church in Rice Lake. Coming up next, it's a volley of veterans of summer theater, which began in Eau Claire about 53 years ago, lasted 34. And the people with us remember most of it like it was yesterday, as Will Denson does in print with a new book all about it. First, here's a few Spectrum memos for you. The Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee presents the comedy and magic of David Harris, Saturday evening at 7:30. Then the stories of Kevin Kling and the music of Simone Perrin come up next Saturday, February 10th at 7:30 p.m. By the way, on next week's show, we'll have Simone with her accordion. I am keyed up about that. And the fabulous Harmonious Whale returns to the Mabel Tainter on the 16th of February. The website there is mabeltainter.org. Here's a big deal, too. Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m., it's the Big Eats Festival, EATS. Eats stands for Educational Assistance Through Scholarship at UW Barron County in Rice Lake. You can mingle, eat, drink, and be entertained, all while strolling UWBC public spaces. It's the 9th annual, and proceeds support student scholarships, professional development, and campus initiatives. One more quickie. The River Falls Community Arts Base presents art classes the third Thursday of the month. Calligraphy is coming February 15th. The registration deadline for that is the 8th of February. Bookmaking is coming March 15th. You got to register for that by March 8th. It all started with Will Denson and I thinking about sharing the story of his new book. And then suddenly we heard, "The More the Merrier" in our heads. The book is Life Upon the Wicked Stage, the history of summer theater in Eau Claire. Of course, history happens because people usually make it happen. So maybe we should find some of those people and see what they remember. Not a bad idea. Well, we don't have time to unveil everyone's current and impressive credentials. If we started that, we wouldn't get to the topic at hand. Thankfully, many in the Spectrum West audience are familiar with Will and his work, so suffice it to say, Will has a new book. And all of our other guests, at one time or another, enjoyed each other's company or the experience of summer theater in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, that got its start in 1965. Before I make introductions, Will, tell me about the title. It's a song, right? From Showboat? It's a lyric, yeah,
from Showboat, as you say. And it's also a title that I stole for a show that I wrote for summer theater back in the last century, Life Upon the Wicked Stage. So I sort of borrowed from both of those things.
Life Upon the Wicked Stage Ain't Ever What a Girl Supposes.
That's it, yeah. I got virtue, but it ain't been tested. No one's even interested.
This is a fun reunion, and people should realize that Will is the reason. So in addition to Will, in the studio with me, Carol Spencer. She was one of the original members, and I'll get into it individually with you. Carol, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And to Carol's left is Jeff Roshan. Good
Hello.
To have you with us.
Good to be here.
Steve Turek.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here. And on the telephone, Lila Robbins.
Hello. Nice to be here. Thanks.
And the beautiful Larry Heagle.
Oh, stop. Glad to be with you guys.
This book, as you look at it and read it, appears to be kind of a scrapbook of sorts, a scrapbook that I imagine you smiling a lot as you sat at the keyboard reminiscing. And when one starts, as we all know, to recall things, each memory opens doors to more episodes. How close am I in that label? The smiling part, the avalanche of memories? Yes.
Almost all of it was smiling. There were a couple nights that there were more grimaces than smiles, but it really, really takes you back. tend to write in the morning from about 7 until 10 or something like that. And sitting down at the desk was like going back to Care Theater and sitting out in the sun. I mean, you just remember all the stuff, the loading dock and rehearsals and all of the things. It really takes you back.
I'm going to let all of our guests know. I will get to your personal involvement with the theater momentarily, but as we talk, if you do have something you want to dive in on, just feel free to go ahead and do that. So, June 15th, 1965, let's enter the Wayback Machine. Leonard Haas, then Wisconsin State University Eau Claire president, had his mind made up in a meeting with John Manlove, who was Earl Kerr's replacement, and Wayne Wolfert. What was his role?
Wayne was the resident designer and technical director for a lot of years, and he was in that original meeting. He was not in the original company because he was working in his PhD at the time, but Wayne was included in the meeting because we had a very small department then, and he virtually was the department.
Too bad Mr. Kerr didn't survive to enjoy the fruits of summer theater. He did have a theater named in his honor, and that's where summer theater began. It sounds like they dove in with both feet that first season, and it's neat that we have two charter members of the summer theater here in Larry and Carol. So what we should do is probably ask Larry and Carol, since Will came a year later, what that first year was like. And Carol, ladies first.
It was hot. And it was long, long, long hours. But the camaraderie, the fun, we couldn't replace that in any way. Larry and I got to play opposite each other in the big melodrama. I got to play Sadie Thompson in Rain. And that was very hot as well because our director, John Figelmiller, for one of our rehearsals decided that we had to understand how hot it was. So he had us in the dressing room in the basement, doors closed, heater on for a rehearsal.
Wow.
But it was fun. We had a good time, right, Larry?
That's right. It was always fun. We were very, very dedicated to what we were doing. I have very little memory of the first season. In fact, my memory is failing rapidly every year. That's why it's really good and fun for me to read Will's account, and so well written and so easy to read. It's really fun to read. All I remember about that first season, other than the melodrama, was pounding nails and painting flats. And I'll always remember John Figelmiller doing his impression of, I can't remember who it was, but he said, "I want to be alone with the clout nail." Every time I think of Figgy, I think of that.
So it being brand new, did you guys feel that it had some legs, or did you feel like you were doing something experimental? How did it all feel psychologically to you?
I don't think it was. I don't think we felt it was experimental. I think we really wanted it to be successful, and we worked very hard. I was not a techie person, but I certainly learned a lot, which served me well when I went on to teach and direct theater in the high school. We thought it was great, and we wanted it to be successful.
Well, congratulations on being part of what turned out to be a very good foundation. Let's introduce our other guests and get specific momentarily. Steve Turek is with us. Steve, you, according to the short bio you sent me, started in 1977, and even then you and everybody worked in all areas of the theater.
We did. I started in 1977. I was in the chorus of Annie, Get Your Gun. But what I appreciated is that then you had a week of publicity, you did a week of set, you did a week of costumes. You really got to learn all the aspects. And then you found out, I think, what you were most comfortable and what Will thought you were good at, because then I did a lot of house managing in future years after that.
Ah, okay. And you did some directing in your final summer.
I did throughout the seasons with Pump Boys and Dinettes with Peanut, and then ended the summer theater with directing Fiddler on the Roof.
Jeff Rochon is with us as well. Jeff, you were also a 70s and a little bit of 80s guy. You were on the musical end of things, it looks like.
I was. I started out in Company 10, so the 10th year of the program. I was actually on stage that year. I was an apprentice. We got 8 credits to work all summer, all day long. But then the following year, I was the musical director. And so orchestra conductor as well, and did that for five more seasons and thoroughly enjoyed it. We did some wonderful shows.
You hired the orchestra? You rehearsed the cast? You conducted performances, as you said?
That's right. We hired the orchestra. We were just talking before taping here that we were trying to remember what we paid the orchestra, because we did pay them, but it wasn't much. It was $15 or $20 per performance. So it wasn't easy to get people to mm-hmm. commit to this, but we did get them to commit. I'd go looking for the best players in town. I'd hire them, I'd hand them their part, and make them commit to having it down before the first rehearsal. We had very limited rehearsal schedule with the orchestra before we opened, but the players were as good as their word, and they came prepared, and we made some really fine music.
Good stuff. Well, here's a name you might recognize, folks. Lila Robbins is with us on the phone from New York. Lila, you have gone on to many bigger roles and bigger audiences. You notice I haven't used the word better. I used bigger.
Nothing is better.
Yeah,
nothing
tell us. Yeah, you were here 78 to 81. Thanks for the information you sent. So often I hear people who have gone on to bigger things talk about the experience they had in smaller days. The experience you gained here in Eau Claire, talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really honestly believe I wouldn't be an actress today if it wasn't for Will Denson and the Summer Theater. You know, just an opportunity to work all during the school year, but then to continue that work into the summer was invaluable as far as just getting experience. And I remember I came up in 77 to check out the school. I was checking out the music school, and we thought, oh, there's a show tonight. Let's go see that. So my parents and I, we went to see Annie Get Your Gun. And I remember just being blown away by that production and thinking immediately, I want to come to this school. And Steve Turek, I don't remember you from the chorus, but we did work together later in La Mancha. And Fiddler on the Roof, and Jeff, I met, I think it was the summer, my first summer was My Fair Lady, the 78, or was that 79? He was conducting the orchestra, and I also remember Suzanne Thompson, our choreographer. Mm-hmm. I have never, this is before, you know, working out was sort of popular, and we would have these dance calls that I literally could not move my body the next day, and I learned all about Epsom salts that summer. I had never been so sore or have been that sore since. So we worked hard being in the chorus of My Fair Lady. And then all the fun we had with Gypsy. I was 21 years old when I did Gypsy. I played Mama Rose. And I remember there was a wonderful actress from town, Linda Bouton, who I believe was 32 years old at the time. And I thought to myself, what is this old lady doing in our show? Of course, the rest is history.
You said when we spoke via email, you were going to pull out the photo album. Did you do that?
I did. My mother, I'm so happy. My mom has always been very insistent on getting at least five or six photos from each show I've ever done. And I look back at the pictures and think back on all the fun that we had. Barefoot in the Park, David White directed that one. That was my first show in the summer theater with Art Moss and Man of La Mancha. Oh, Private Lives was so much fun. With Suzanne Thompson was actually acting in that one with Douglas Cox. And
Paul Hermanson was in that also.
Yeah.
You know, Lila, while we have your attention, a lot of accomplished actors go places to participate in summer theater all over America and throughout their career. You must know some heavyweights who do it for fun and the practice, do you?
My summer theater tends to be the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey.
Okay.
Which is in Madison, New Jersey, on the Drew University campus. A friend of mine, Bonnie Monty, runs that theater, and she used to be the right-hand woman of a wonderful man named Nikos Sakharopoulos, who actually ran the Williamstown Theater Festival at Williams College in Massachusetts. And that's sort of where I got my first professional break. So she then, when he passed away, she was not given the theater, and she went to start her own theater in New Jersey. And I've done about 12 shows there. So that seems to be my summer my summer gig. But
it seems to me, I've heard other actors say, "I love going to the Hamptons," or "I love going to this and participating in summer theater." It seemed like it was something that people, no matter what they've done, no matter what volume of things they've done, they still like to go back and do it.
Oh, for the summer, going up to Cape Cod, or
sure.
You know, I also am involved with some play development places like New York Stage and Film, which is on Vassar College, the O'Neill, which is in Connecticut. We develop new plays, and also I've been to Ojai, California to develop new plays. Mm. But, summer theater just has such a playful thing about it. I mean, you're putting on a show, but it's also, it's just, as Carol said, the camaraderie and just the intensity of the work sort of bonds you in a way that's different from a regular, you know, professional show, in that you're just working such crazy hours and trying to get the thing up, and you barely know your lines, and you just throw it out there, and, you know, you sink or swim, and it's just fun and very bonding.
Yeah, thank you. Larry Heagle, you said in your bio that 1970 was your best year in summer theater. Tell us why that was.
Well, no, you got to remember, I think that was the year I did Odd Couple with Doug Cox.
Yep.
That cemented our relationship. I love Doug, and I will love him to my dying day. And we had such a good time doing that show, except Doug, I have to tell you, Doug had a problem. He had a problem, and he had a habit. His problem was he never was quite sure of his lines. And whenever he kind of went up, he'd just make up a line, and he'd look at me like, "What are you going to do with that?" And the other thing was he would purposely move upstage. So people just kept telling me, "You better watch Doug, because he's getting you so you get your back to the audience." That was his favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, he would do that, and then the other thing was, like I say, he didn't really, sometimes he'd throw a line at me that he wasn't even a script and say, "Well, what are you going to do with that, pal?" And so it was a great run, and it was such a good script. I mean, how could we go wrong? And the other show, you have to remind me what we did that year. What did I say?
Funny thing happened on the way to the Forum.
Oh, Forum. Yeah, we all thought, I was kind of surprised when I read that section in Will's book, because we all thought that was the greatest show of the summer. And we had so much fun with it. And then I realized from Will's writing, the audience liked it, but we loved it. So who gives a darn? We had more fun than the audience. And that was the most important. The thing I remember most about that show is Doug Cox loves props. And as Hysterium, he had a one of those cotton clotheslines around his waist, which he added two large styrofoam balls, drilled holes in them, and they tied knots on the end so he'd stay on his costume, which, of course, drew attention to him at all times. But one night, I'm supposed to do this cross. He's just supposed to pop out from center stage, stay a line, and then go back. And, there's a bing-bing, and I'm gone on the other side. But one night, he doesn't come out. So I just looked. He wasn't there, so I just kept on going. I got back. He said, "Doug, you didn't make your entrance." Where were you? He says, "I got my balls caught in the flat."
You're lucky this is public radio. We can let that go.
You got a styrofoam ball.
Sure, I get that. Let me remind our audience, we are talking about a new book by Will Denson. It's called Life Upon the Wicked Stage, The History of Summer Theater in Eau Claire. We have a plethora of guests in the studio with me, and Will is Steve Turek, Jeff Roshan, and Carol Spencer, and on the phone, Lila Robbins and Larry Heagle.
Life upon the wicked stage is nothing for a girl.
And we'll return to this delightful committee in just a moment on Spectrum West.
We do not believe you. There is no doubt you're crazy.
Support for WPR comes from the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Essayist Kevin Kling, known for his commentaries on NPR's All Things Considered, brings his storytelling to the Mabel Tainter February 10th, MabelTainter.org. Coming up next week, it's Jim Oliver and Bob Carr, another summer theater alum, directing the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Out of Order. Nobu is back, and lots more. For now, let's return to our lively group gathered to celebrate Will Denson's new book about the history of summer theater in Eau Claire. Will, what's a good way to describe this book? I mean, it's not a history book because there's too much pleasure in your voice and personality as you tell the stories. Feels like somebody reminiscing about summer camp, which maybe it was to some.
Yeah, it's a memoir, and there is some history in it, and there's some mistakes in it, and there's some things left out of it. But it was my life, I know, for 32 years, and altogether, I guess I did 38 years of summer theater here and there. But it was what you did. It was our life.
So give us an idea of the specifics. You were doing a play, and for instance, how many performances would you do of a show?
It varied a little bit. Some shows we did as few times as five. We did it five nights a week. And some shows, for example, I think Peter Pan, we did 13 performances. We did 12 nights and one matinee. So it varied from show to show, either 1 week or 2 weeks. And that was about, I think My Fair Lady set a record for attendance where we did that 12 performances and played to over 7,000 audience members, which I hope, I think, and don't contradict me, it was the most people that ever went to a theater production in Eau Claire. But I can't prove it.
Well, the numbers are kind of staggering. I mean, 34 consecutive summers, 126 shows, three different venues. What venues were those?
We were in Care most of the time. Then we shifted into Gantner Concert Hall, and ultimately we were in also Riverside Theater. Some summers we worked on all three venues.
We should point out, too, that at the beginning of the book, you talk about the patio. Was it called the patio theater?
It was called the patio playhouse, yeah.
Okay.
There was a patio. Nobody could ever find it, but it was located behind the theater, sort of between where Care Theater is now and the Phillips Science Hall. And if you'd made the right turns and knew somebody to guide you, you could find it, but that was the only way. We kept the title for, I think, 9 years and ultimately dropped the title, dropped the patio, dropped everything, and just David Morgan changed the name to Company 10, and then we're Company 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
When I was reading your book, I thought, patio playhouse. Now I know where the patio was, and I was there.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I wanted to ask you, it's Lila here. Out of the 38, you said 38 years that you ran it and directed there. How many roles did you play? I mean, I know that when we did My Fair Lady, you were a fantastic Doolittle, but I'm not aware of how many other roles you played during the time.
One that I particularly, I did maybe a half a dozen or 10. I don't remember, but I remember when I wrote the show, Life Upon the Wicked Stage, which is a melodrama. I wanted to be in it, but I didn't want to memorize lines, so I wrote a role that didn't have any dialogue, that he just grunted. He was a Frankenstein monster. That was a good time then, so we're strange.
I want to hear a line from you from My Fair Lady. Lay one on me.
I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are going to chime.
Well, there you go. See?
Don't ever let me do that again.
I may have started something, too. I think everybody's going to chime in. So, 1,224 performances, audiences totaling nearly 300,000 people. 6 nights a week, 8 weeks a season. When did that, did it start right after school ended? Did it go, what? Middle of June to middle of August?
Classes ended on a Friday, we started rehearsals on Monday.
I mean,
it was bam, bam, and you were right in it.
Wow.
And I want to go back to something Steve said about doing advertising, where he brushed it off, said, oh, we did advertising. We got the phone book out, and we called personally every single person in the Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Altoona phone books. Everybody got called, and that was our main source of sales. And I think that's one way where we started to slide is when I couldn't, or whoever was running things couldn't force people to do that anymore. But to be on the phone from 9 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon and then do pickup calls from 7 until 9, it was wow. something.
And the excitement when someone, I got one! Yeah. I sold a season ticket!
Well, and that's all pre-cell phone and pre-text yeah, and everything. Yeah, you sure. had to.
And then at our lunch breaks, we'd do promos at various lunch spots around town, the White House and Staffney's and others. Yeah. I can't remember their names. But during our lunch hour, we'd run up to these places with Sue Anderson, our superb accompanist, and we'd sing for the people, whether they liked it or not. But it did get word of mouth going, and it's a tribute to Will. Not only were the shows really well done, but he put people in the seats, and that was no easy task.
Jeff mentions the easy part of going at noon hours. There were also the 7 o'clock That's early right. morning optimists where right. people got up at 6 in the morning and went to breakfast and smiled for an hour. Mm-hmm. It was tough sledding.
Did you videotape anything back then? Because we had reels of videotape back then, I think, and then what was it, VHS maybe?
Yeah, huh? The technology wasn't great, but we did tape some of them.
Did you?
Yeah, and generally, you lock a camera down and you just shoot what was happening and then hope that your mics could pick it up. But it was not what you might call professional level stuff. But
and you talk a little bit about reviews. You know, the reviews weren't of the Broadway type, but you were concerned about them. You wanted.
Yeah.
And the newspaper did them.
The old adage of any publicity is better than no publicity. Really yeah. is true. And I, looking back, I think it was what I'm talking about there mainly is the Eau Claire Leader Telegram. And we were treated fairly in later seasons, especially the first season, we weren't reviewed at all. They wrote articles about it, but you couldn't tell really whether anybody liked it or not because it didn't appear to the reviewers. And the reviewers weren't professional reviewers. They were... some of them really liked the theater. Some were just assigned, but it was a catch-as-catch-can kind of situation.
A new book by Will Denson. It's called Life Upon the Wicked Stage, The History of Summer Theater in Eau Claire. In the studio is Jeff Rochon, Steve Turek, and Carol Spencer, and on the phone, Lila Robbins and Larry Heagle. I'm going to go down the line now, and sorry, but the first person is not going to have the luxury of being able to think about it. But as a wrap-up, I'd like to hear what, and all you other guys have the luxury of being able to think about it, one favorite memory that you might have. And rather than call on someone, if there is someone out there who has one instantaneously memorable moment, go ahead and dive in, and we can go from there.
Because I got to hit the road. I have a gig this afternoon.
Okay. Okay, Larry, you're on.
My very favorite was doing Brush Up Your Shakespeare and Kiss Me, Kate, again with Doug Cox. It took us days upon days to learn a simple little step that Suzanne taught us, and we were, I'm sure, pretty pathetic to watch all the way through, but we finally managed to do it, so much so that we got at least one encore a night, and our egos grew exponentially every night. So it was great fun. Doug will always be a very special person to me. That's mine.
Okay, Larry, and I know you have to run because you got to go sing and stuff. So thanks for being with us. Everybody say goodbye to Larry.
Bye, Larry.
Bye.
Bye, Larry.
Bye.
See ya. Okay, who's next? Who has another moment they want?
Well, I'll jump in. Lila mentioned Linda Bhutan, and in reading the book, I was reminded of something that I'd forgotten. During the run of My Fair Lady, our leading lady, tell me your name, Will.
Sue Sweeney.
One night could not do the show, and we had no understudy. And Linda Bhutan, to her great credit, stepped up and in a day learned everything she needed to know. She was familiar with the show.
Wow.
But she got on stage and did a remarkably good performance, almost cold. It was something to remember.
You have to remember, too, that Eliza carries that damn show.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is just, she didn't step into the chorus. She stepped into the lead.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is a good story.
And she did a great job.
She did, yeah.
Who's next?
It's Lila here. Barefoot in the Park, I guess only because it was my first one. I was so excited to be a part of the company. And then, you know, Private Lives was, you know, it was a very small cast, four people, you know, very sophisticated dialogue, British accents, had never done that before, beautiful, elegant, glamorous costumes. I love that. But then, you know, with Gypsy, I mean, I just remember standing outside of Gantner and listening to the overture, like, and I'd run around back then to start the show, but I wanted to feel the overture coming at me from behind the audience, you know, behind the audience. I'd sort of sneak back there. And just to feel that music and the joy of that show, oh, and my goodness, wasn't David White the rear end of the cow or something?
Yeah, he was. That's right.
Yeah.
The overture to that show, I think, is when the brass strikes up, the overture to that show, it's the most exciting moment in theater, I think. It's just remarkable.
Wow. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I think I struggled. I had some vocal problems on that one, but boy, that was fun to give Rose's Turn a try, you know? Don't try that at home, is all I can say.
Thank you, Lila. Who's next? Who has another moment?
Well, I have so many memories. It's hard to just pick and choose one of them. When we did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, that was the most challenging show that I probably ever did. But I love doing Noises Off. It was just crazy backstage. And we never knew if we were going to make our entrances and exits, and the sets were turning, and it was just great fun. That was a wonderful experience as well. You know, and I could go on and on. There were so many great shows that were great fun. I played Miss Tweed in... What's the name of the show? I can't think of it.
Something's Afoot.
And I had to wear wool. So every night, I didn't never had to shower because I was always dripping wet. Anyway, those were just great experiences and, you know, fun and memorable.
Yeah, I know, Steve, now you, thank you very much, Carol. I know, Steve, you mentioned in your brief bio that you did have a favorite show. You said favorite show, ? And it's what?
I loved doing Man of La Mancha with Lyle and Scott Kearney. It was just one of my favorites. For a two-week run, we just worked our butts off. It was magical. And another one I got to mention is Annie. It was the first time we did it in the area. And as a chorus member, it was a joy because with Suzanne's choreography, we're always moving. And I still remember the one night that Will and David White went up into the crawl space, the wings, and watched us because of all the costume changes just in one number of NYC. He couldn't believe that we would come on singing and smiling, get to the wings and change into another costume in like 10 seconds and come right back on out. But that was a magical show for me.
Steve Turek was so wonderful in that, playing Sancho Panza, and your beautiful, pure tenor voice, Steve. You had such a pure tenor. It was just gorgeous.
Thanks, Aldonza.
And he got to play it again in community theater.
Should I ask you to demonstrate that tenor
voice? No, not today.
Because Will did a nice job. You know, I have to say that Carol, in her bio, the last line she wrote is a good way to wrap this all up. And it reads thusly, "Nothing is more satisfying than working with a group of friends in the creative process and getting applause as well."
You're here.
Yes, true.
Well said.
Will, it's a wonderful book. Everybody who was involved in summer theater is going to just love it and eat it up. And everybody who wasn't involved in summer theater, who may have gone in the audience, even a guy like me who never even lived here during that time, I love the book. So it's out. It's the ink is drying. And how do we get it?
Well, be nice if people could come to the read-through, which is going to be on February 9th. It's at the local store in Eau Claire.
Okay.
It'll be for sale there. You can contact me personally. I'm at Post Office Box 1828.
Okay.
Send me all of your money, and I'll send you a copy of it. Either that or $15, and I'll get you one. But, yeah, it's available, and I currently have 7 boxes in my garage.
It's called Life Upon the Wicked Stage, the history of summer theater in Eau Claire. We have enjoyed a conversation with the author, Will Denson, also Steve Turek, Jeff Roshan, Carol Spencer, Lila Robbins on the phone, and Larry Heagle, who left a little early but made a good contribution. Put some belief and passion into something, and it'll be a fond memory forever. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, since we have some stagey music playing, what's on stage today and tomorrow in West Wisconsin? Here's Jim Oliver.
Thank you, Al. Disney's My Son Pinocchio will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater Friday through Sunday at the State Theater. There will be two performances on Saturday. The Barron Spotlighters will stage Peter Panic Saturday and Sunday, and the following Thursday through Sunday at the Barron Area Community Center. The Great River Road Theater will present a dinner theater production of Lie, Cheat, and Genuflect Friday through Sunday and next Thursday through Sunday at the Ridgetop on Highway 10 near Prescott. Reservations are required. For information, go to www.greatriverroadtheater.org. Theater is spelt with an R-E, by the way. The Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls will present 12 Angry Jurors, a staged reading Friday in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present Out of Order, February 8th through 11th and the 15th through the 18th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Junie B. Jones is Not a Crook, a production of the Phipps Children's Theater, will be presented Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, February 9th through the 25th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will stage Stone Soup for student audiences weekdays through February 23rd. Members of the Northern Lakes Theater Guild will hold a reading of love poems for St. Valentine's Day, Saturday, February 10th at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater will hold auditions for Charlotte's Web at 7 p.m. February 11th and 12th at the Oxford Theater. I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of this edition of Spectrum West. Next week, Jim and Bob Carr with the next Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production. Nobu previews the Chippewa Valley Symphony gig, the next one. Simone Perrin and Kevin Kling come to the Mabel Tainter. Simone brings her accordion to the studio next week and more. Thanks, Hannah, Kate, and Dean, and thank you guys for showing up in our audience. We'll do it again next week. See you then.